You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
LaVine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball and the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShibles, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Hit us up, text and voicemail line at 331-979-1369. We're doing mailbag today. This is one of my favorite episodes we do every single week, just because we get a chance to hear from you, the fan, and more importantly, some talk about topics that sometimes we don't even think of or we're not hitting on enough. Hit us up though, 331-979-1369. We want all of your text messages, all of your voicemails as well. Hit us up there, and you can always reach us at social media too as well. Twitter at Locked On Bulls, facebook.com as well. Matt, welcome back. One question, are we still friends?
Yeah, I love you. You know I love you, Jordan.
Things got a little heated, but that's all right.
It was nice. A shout out and thanks again to Petty Page, a.k.a. Paige DeMacos, who joined us for our show yesterday. I think it was good because it was overall a very nice, happy, let's remember fond moments kind of show with Paige, and she and I hearkening back to some of our favorite childhood memories from the Dynasty days. And I think it was good. I think it was necessary because clearly Friday's or Monday's show ended on a bit of a not a rough note, but clearly you and I were not seeing eye to eye on something. It makes for good content, man. Hopefully our listeners out there enjoyed the debate. And again, a reminder to those of you who started with Locked On Bulls when Cody Westerlund and Sean Hyken were here, and props to them for doing a great job to get this podcast up and running. And you kept listening when we came in. Jordan and I started a Bulls podcast, or I actually jumped into one that Jordan had already started, and it was called The Debatables. So this is a Bulls therapy show. This is a show where we analyze games and give you content and give our insights and our takes and our opinions. But this show, when it comes to me and Jordan, it started as a debate show, and that certainly comes back into the fold from time to time, and it definitely did on Monday. But yes, of course, we're still friends.
The one thing I want to clarify, and I don't want to get into this again, the only one thing I want to clarify from Monday's episode, though, is I was under the impression that you were talking about moving Parker from the 3 and moving to start him at the 4 and start Markkanen at the 5. Your idea of him playing at the 4, I think, just goes without question. I think he's still going to get minutes at the 4 no matter what, and it just depends on the rotations. And I think that's even more so clear when and if and when they move Robin Lopez. So that's where I was hung up, and I guess I was tunnel visioned at the time because my head was about to explode.
Yeah, you're so hot.
Wanted to clarify that at least, but we're doing mailbag today. So all the questions, like I said before, 331-979-1469 is the place to hit us up. You can always get us on Twitter as well, at Locked On Bulls, or even on Facebook too as well. So let's start with the first question.
I never said the word start, by the way. Just before.
I know.
I said find ways to give him minutes at the four.
Listening back to the episode, and even when I was editing the episode, I'm like, damn. I'm like, the way I was thinking and what you were saying were two different things, and I guess I was just tunnel visioned at that point.
You know what happens when you assume things, don't you, Jordan? Did you ever learn this saying as a kid?
Let's hear it again.
When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me.
I've never heard that one before, but that is great. I've never heard that before.
For real? It's one of those little sayings that you learn as a kid that I've always kept with me because it's dangerous to assume things, man. Ugly things happen based on, it's basically every bad 90s sitcom and or 90s rom-com. It's based on people making false assumptions and then shit goes haywire. All you got to do is, devil's in the details, man. As long as you don't assume anything and make sure everybody's understanding of one another and what needs to be said, what opinions are had, less is likely to go wrong.
Real quick before we get to this question, just a little update on Bulls news. Yesterday, it was made official that Derek Walton Jr., former Michigan standout, four-year player there, signed a deal with the Bulls to join them in training camp. It is not a two-way deal, so they're going to go into training camp. We're going to get into this more in tomorrow. We want to spend the bulk of the time today taking your questions. Just wanted to update fans who may not be on Twitter, did not hear this at all, but Derek Walton Jr., he played on a two-way deal with the Heat last year, going to be joining the Bulls for training camp. I do like this deal, and we'll talk a little bit more about it tomorrow. But starting with the first question here, this is a text message from the 224. It says, hey guys, you've kind of touched on this already, but staggering minutes between Jabari, Valentine, Hutchison, Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, and Wendell Carter Jr. will be a difficult task. Making the roster work cohesively, moreover, is daunting, and giving Fred that responsibility makes it entirely likely that one or two pieces get left out and isn't given much of an opportunity to contribute. Which of one or two players do you believe are most likely to be victimized of this deceptive Garpax hometown kid marketing scheme? So, Matt, I'll let you touch on that one first. This is a good question.
Yeah, it is. And it's kind of what we were talking about on Monday when it comes to what is Fred's biggest job this season and what he needs to do to make this front office convinced and impressed when it comes to wanting to keep Fred to finish out the fifth year of his contract and perhaps even beyond that. He's got to figure out how to make these guys play well together on the court. And at least with one guy in particular, and that's Jabari, figuring out how to play a square peg in a round hole. As far as the question of, which player is the most likely to be victims of this hometown kid marketing scheme, I think I would say, and it sounds silly because he's a rookie that we don't know a whole lot about yet, but I would probably go with Chandler Hutchison. Because I don't know if I'm sold on Denzel Valentine as being a piece of this Bulls rebuild long term. And we don't really have a wing, a 3-and-D wing who can guard multiple positions and shoot the ball confidently from behind the arc, maybe also put the ball on the floor, do some different things offensively. And that's, Paxson said as much coming into the draft, like, we'll definitely be looking at the wing position. It's why we kept talking about both of the Bridges as potential Bulls picks. And instead, they decided to go with Wendell Carter Jr. and then took a flyer on a late-round prospect in Hutchison who played some shooting guard and some small forward at Boise State. What's up to our Idaho listener? I want to say Jeremy. I hope I got that right.
Yep.
So if Jabari playing at the three, and as you were saying in Monday's show, like really they're hammering at home, play Jabari at the three, so that you also leave Markkanen alone at the four, I'm upset if that eats into the minutes that Chandler Hutchison would be getting in his rookie year. Because I'm not saying that Chandler Hutchison is going to come in here and set the world on fire as a rookie, but I'm intrigued enough about his game and so concerned about the real long-term solution at the wing position that I want to see what the kid has got. And so that would be my response to that.
I think this is a very difficult question for me to determine because I look at it in a fact that I don't want this to happen, but this might be the realistic idea, is that maybe Bobby Portis might be a victim of this, especially if the way you were talking about Jabari, if he has to be used more at the four than the three, if things don't work out, I think that's going to limit the amount of playing time Bobby Portis gets. I hope not, because I think that's the worst solution. You know, a guy that came out and had a phenomenal season last year. He was one of 10 players to average 13 points, at least 6 rebounds, and shot over 35% from three and shot over 45% from the field. One of only 10 players in the entire league. And the way you're going to reward him is reduce his minutes next year. I think that's not fair to Bobby Portis, but that might happen. I agree partially about Hutchison. The only thing I would say is, and maybe this was just at first glance, thinking about Denzel Valentine, thinking maybe he might get an opportunity at the shooting guard position more so than anything else, but he's played 74% of his career minutes at the small forward position. And last year, 94% of his minutes were at the small forward position. So that might be a spot where Denzel Valentine is going to come in. And if Parker, you know, in that second unit, Parker comes out, maybe they go small ball in the backcourt. And you're looking at Denzel Valentine on the three. I don't know how well that's going to work defensively, but that's a bigger issue than anything else. So I would think Portis is probably going to be a guy that this might affect. And I hope not. I hope they can move Robin Lopez. Parker works out at the three good enough to at least keep him there. And Portis gets his minutes off the bench, because I really do believe he can be a productive player here in Chicago. And especially if they're talking about long-term extensions, they're definitely going to want to at least have Bobby out there playing. Same thing with Denzel Valentine. If he's not part of this core, you got to find ways to get him on the floor to at least showcase him to other teams if you're thinking about moving him or thinking about moving Portis.
Let's not touch on Denzel Valentine's trade value right now, because I don't want to go there. But, you know, the idea about Portis is legit. And actually, you know, while we're doing mailbag, shout out to the 808 texter who put that into part of his question about, you know, the fear of Jabari's influence on the rotation. And that, you know, he's talking about what we were talking about Monday, which is shift to the Bulls shifting Markkanen into the five, because they have said that they believe he has potential to play that position at some point in his career. And we're just wondering when that's going to happen. So if that's what you do and you play Jabari at the four and you move Markkanen into the five and you still have Wendell Carter Jr., like, Bobby might be the odd man out. And Bobby, who did have a huge comeback year last year, you know, and, you know, to Denzel's credit, he also had big upticks statistically across the board as well. But I think if you're going to say who has the higher trade value in the NBA right now, I think it's not a hard answer to say that Bobby Portis has significantly higher trade value than Denzel Valentine. I think we can all agree on that. So if they really do want Jabari to work, and maybe Jabari does come in and impress them, and he also impresses them while he's playing some minutes at the four, Bobby might be a victim here, where the Bulls say, you know what, Bobby has a non-zero trade value. He's still young. He is a great, versatile offensive guy who can, you know, work towards playing both the four and the five. And, you know, as far as like the grit and the hustle and all that, you know, all the intangibles that you want out of a guy and a teammate, they might look to shop Bobby. I don't want that to happen, but it's certainly another answer, possible answer to the who might be victims of Jabari and the rotation.
Real quick question for you. This kind of goes back to our both of us agreed that sooner rather than later, you got to get Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez off this roster. That, I think, will alleviate a lot of these problems, because like we talked about, I think Hutchison can also not only play the three, but play the two as well. You get Justin Holiday off this roster, it opens up things. It opens up flexibility as far as where you can move guys. As far as your backcourt goes, you know, Denzel can play the two. Hutchison can play the two or the three. Denzel can play the two or the three as well in that second unit. So I think it's imperative, especially looking at Justin Holiday's numbers, which are garbage. If you can't find a way to move him, then I would at least like to see him not get as many minutes as he was getting last year. If we're talking like a reduced amount of minutes, like between 15 and 18 minutes a night, you don't think so?
I agree with you. No, I don't want Justin Holiday to be getting significant minutes this season.
Right.
The dude is not a part of the team's future. He's at a position where the Bulls are really focusing on getting other guys involved. And I don't see trade value there with Justin Holliday. He might be included in some larger trade and potentially a three-team trade. Those are always more difficult to pull off. But I'm sorry, like, if it's a business, and sometimes it's an awful, stinky business when it comes to the players not having power, and maybe they're good enough to be playing on this Bulls roster, but they're not. They shouldn't be playing on this Bulls roster because they're not part of the long-term plans. And that is exactly the definition of Justin Holliday right now. So if I'm Fred and I'm Garin Paxson, I'm saying, look, Justin Holliday has no business being in the starting lineup. I don't, you know, regardless of what happens in training camp, we're going to have an unfortunate, unpleasant conversation with Justin Holliday that is basically, you're not going to play. you're just not going to play. And, you know, I'm sorry, the league putting the Bulls on notice last season when they were sitting Holliday and Lopez, I'm sorry, but I don't think that they are going to run the risk of getting something similar this season, because it's not like Holliday was helping them.
No, not
at
all.
If the league looks at Holiday's numbers last season, like, just because the dude's a veteran more so than some of these other young guys doesn't mean that benching him means you're tanking. No. It can just be, no, Justin Holliday got beat out for his roster spot, and he is sitting, and his contract will expire, and if we can't move him, we will just let this season play out, and he'll be a cheerleader on the bench. Sorry, but that's the way the business goes sometimes.
Who gets more minutes when it's all said and done this season, Justin Holliday or Cristiano Felicio?
Oh, God. Yeah, that is such a poopy question. I'll have to say Justin Holliday. I guess I don't, you know, it's like, hey, would you rather have herpes or gonorrhea? Like, I don't want either of those answers to be right.
That's so true. All right, we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking a couple voicemails as well as your text messages. Once again, you can hit us up if you want to be a part of the conversation. 331-979-1369. Hit us up on Twitter at Locked On Bulls or on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
What's up, and welcome back into Locked On Bulls. Matt Peck and Jordan Malley hanging out with you on a Mailbag Wednesday. It's time to check in with one of our regulars, DVS.
Jordan, Matt, what's going on? This is DVS. Hey, I just listened to you guys literally trying to tear each other's throats out over Markkanen versus Jabari Parker. And as entertaining as it was, I wanted to toss an angle at you. What if the signing of Jabari Parker was more a huge cosign for what they're seeing from Chandler Hutchinson and Denzel Valentine? I know you're laughing to yourself, but hear me out. One of the biggest things that I'm seeing is that since they both are technically fours, and since I'm married to the idea since we've signed the guy, I'm thinking that you're probably going to see a lot of staggered lineups where marketing's going to get a lot of time with the first unit. But then they're going to sit, like, either probably sit Jabari, since we're talking about his knees. And you're going to see a lot of Hutchinson playing the three as well as Valentine playing the three. And we don't really talk about Hutchinson, but I think all we really need him to do is kind of improve on defense, just be a hustle guy. You know, kind of what Taj was when he came in there, albeit a different position. But just kind of hustle it up and hold down that wing so that we're not completely porous. So, I mean, granted, they're probably going to be starting the game together, and they're probably going to be closing the game together, which is its own trial. But, I mean, we've got enough scoring, and I think that we're probably not going to see a whole lot of them playing at the same time other than that start and that finish. All right, guys, take it easy.
Thanks for checking in, DVS. Jordan, I'll let you take this one.
I like this idea because he brings up really good points. The flexibility I think you're going to have with this roster, Fred Hoiberg's going to have with this roster, talking about Hutchinson in his first year, he's going to take his lumps, I think, but I think he's more experienced than maybe we are giving credit for, and I think that his development is going to be a little bit easier than maybe talking about an 18 or a 19-year-old you're taking. This guy played 4 years in college basketball, was the main guy in his senior year there, so I don't think I'm necessarily worried. The ceiling isn't nearly as high as a guy that maybe you would get in the top 10 or what the ceiling is for Wendell Carter Jr. this year. But I think a legitimate rotational player, and he brought up points about him getting better on defense. I don't really think that's a big concern for me this year. I looked at his numbers back just in college, his final 2 years. You know, he led the league, and he's a very, very, very good defensive rebounder. So I think his length, among being able to switch between the two and the three, is going to surprise a lot of Bulls fans this year. And I know people still roll their eyes about the whole way it went down as far as he got onto this team and the question marks that they have there. Don't discredit him as a basketball player, though. So I do think that DVS is right, that Hutchinson's going to help as far as being able to be a little bit more versatile with things. Same thing with Denzel Valentine as well. Like we were just talking about before the break, Denzel Valentine can stretch things out. He can play the two or the three. And instead of having to stick Justin Holiday out there for really no reason, you can at least get a better look at a guy in the second unit for Valentine and Hutchinson. But he brings up a really good point that at the beginning of the games, we're going to see a lot of Parker Markkanen and hopefully Wendell Carter Jr. in the starting rotation. And to close out games too, we're going to see a lot of Parker Markkanen and hopefully Wendell Carter Jr. But his idea that throughout the middle of the game, you know, first quarter to end of the third quarter, we're going to see a lot of different rotations. You're going to see Bobby playing the four and the five. You're going to see Parker playing the three and the four. So that's a good point to make and to bring up. What do you think about this as far as, you know, not necessarily having to worry about so much as Parker and Markkanen being on the floor at the same time and what position they're playing, but more so maybe some of these other guys can alleviate that problem?
Yeah, it's and this goes back to our conversation from Monday, and when I was saying, and I wasn't, and I never used the word start, but I was talking about finding ways to play Jabari at the four and the ways that Fred Hoiberg can go about doing that. And I think DVS brings up a good point here, which is that, look, you might be in your starting lineup saying, all right, it's done. It's LaVine in the backcourt, Parker at the three, Markkanen at the four, and then either Rolo or WCJ at the five. At certain points throughout, 48 minutes of basketball, you can find ways to break Markkanen and Jabari at different times, slide Parker to the four. Maybe you're also talking about, you know, finding minutes where LaVine's playing the three if you go small ball and you have, you know, two guards in the back, two smaller guards in the backcourt, and either, you know, either Wendell Carter or Portis at the five or something like that. It definitely can happen a lot this season. I think it will happen a lot this season. The one hang up is that Fred's going to have to do some experimenting and some wiggling as far as what that rotation looks like, to see when it's beneficial to play Jabari at the four instead of the three. The good news is that Fred has done a lot of rotation juggling over the first 3 years in Chicago, so he's got some experience in that area. But it will be a tough test, and then I think when we get closer to the end of the season, especially if this is a Bulls team that's on the fringe of making a playoff spot in a, you know, seventh or eighth seed, and they really want to make a playoff appearance, that is when rotations shrink, right? Whatever it was that you were doing, and this Bulls team looks like it might have a 10-man rotation coming in. Those rotations shrink down to seven or maybe eight. And at that point in the season, does Fred have a concrete rotation of, okay, this is our starting lineup, this is our second unit, this is the part of the game where we can maybe move things around and tinker a little bit with sort of like a non-traditional look on the floor, and this is the lineup we close with? Fred's got to figure that out by March, if by March they look like they are a team good enough to be trying to make the playoffs. And I don't know if he could do that. It's a tough task. It's one of the many things that will be difficult for Fred Hoiberg this season.
The one interesting thing that I don't think we've talked about, and you brought up Zach LaVine, and I'm glad you did. One thing we haven't talked about is if campaign is really bad next year, like talking about worse than we've ever seen before, and it gets to the point where he's unplayable, Zach LaVine can play the point guard position. His first 2 years in the league, 94% of the minutes came at point guard in his rookie season, 35% came at the point guard position in his second year. Obviously, his third year before he went down with the ACL injury, he had 99% of his minutes playing at the shooting guard position, but he's only played a career like less than 1%. At the small forward position. So I think as far as like finding a way to move LaVine around, and if he's going to be playing a lot of minutes next year, which I hope he is, you can move him to the point guard position. You can put either Hutchinson or Valentine at the two and the three. You can flip-flop those guys. And like we were talking about, I think it expands things that you can do at the four and the five. You can put Parker and Parker and Portis there. You can put Portis and Felicio there. You can put Parker and Robin Lopez there. And if Robin Lopez is off this roster, I just think there's a lot of flexibility that maybe we aren't initially looking at. And I think Zach LaVine being, you know, having the ball handling skills and being able to run an offense, I'd be interested to see if they do that if campaign is just terrible this year. But we'll have to wait and see on that. But I think there's a lot of flexibility with this roster.
The one stipulation that I would say there is, I don't know if I'm sold on the gives LaVine minutes running the point experiment. It'd be fun to watch just to see what the hell happens. But my stipulation is, in that scenario, I assume that you are, there's that dangerous word. I'm guessing that you are saying in that scenario, Dunn is resting on the bench. Because you can't shift Dunn out of point guard to shooting guard, at least right now, with the weapons that Dunn has, because Dunn can't play off the ball. Dunn playing off the ball is completely pointless.
Yeah, this is me talking about, like, if Dunn goes out and needs a break and Fred Hoiberg's looking at his bench and saying, yeah, campaign's like unplayable at this point. So LaVine, you're going to have to take a little bit more of a workload, move him to the point guard position, and then you can sub out Zach LaVine and put Chris Dunn back in the game. And this is talking like the meat of the game, like last 4 minutes in the first quarter all the way to like the first 2 minutes in the fourth quarter when you don't have your starting lineups out there. I think there's some shifting that you can do with LaVine. And I'm not saying you have to play a majority of the minutes at point guard or try that experiment for anything, but I think Zach LaVine has the ability to at least do that in a pinch if you need him to do that. And who knows, maybe he surprises us as far as a ball handler and a passer goes too.
Yeah.
So those are the types of things that I would be looking for, but that's an excellent question. I think, go back to that word flexibility, and I hate using that word so much, but it is true. Like, this roster, I know the talent maybe might be in question, but as far as versatility, we've got some guys here that can play multiple positions, and I think that's going to play out to Fred Hoiberg's benefit.
All right, let's move on to our next mailbag topic. This one comes to us from our Facebook buddy, Tiago. What's going on, Tiago? Thanks for checking in. Tiago asks, I just listened to the Jabari Parker discussion from Monday. I guess the real question is, what do the Bulls earn from pleasing Mark Bartlestein? My first instinct was to check which of his players are free agents in 2019 and 2020. I imagined some big names. Guess what? No superstar in his books. Please double check this, but in my mind, pleasing the agent theory is not sticking. That's a valid question that Tiago brings up here. And he is right in that none of the premier top-tier free agents that we're talking about in the 2019 and 2020 coming up are Mark Bartlestein clients. And those of you who are not familiar with that name, he is the head of the agency Priority Sports here in Chicago. And through the years, dating back to the dynasty, dude has represented a lot of Bulls players. And not necessarily Bulls stars, but Bulls role players. Currently, he represents Jabari Parker, Bobby Portis, Chandler Hutchison, and now, as you just mentioned to start the show, Derek Walter. So what do you think about this question that Tiago asked, Jordan? Because I think it's a valid question. What do the Bulls get out of signing so many Mark Bartlestein clients?
I don't take too much from it. I know there's going to be the Bulls pessimist fans out there and the conspiracy theory holders that say, oh, this is another connection that the Bulls have and they're going to use it like a business, blah, 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 blah. I get that, okay? That's cool. I understand it. You can name off a bunch of other guys too. And if you're one of those Bulls fans, don't go look at the list of former players or players that are still on his client list, because it'll probably make you even more angry. Doug McDermott, James Johnson, Taj Gibson, Etuan Moore, Isaiah Cannon.
The list goes on and on, man.
The one thing I would say here is, if this was true, wouldn't you expect Mark Bartlestein's and Priority Sports to push the Bulls to draft Michael Porter Jr.? That was like their number one clients coming into this draft. Wouldn't you think that the Bulls, regardless of his back injuries, if they did truly hold to this testament that making that relationship and holding that relationship together is of utmost importance, and they would have taken Michael Porter Jr. or tried to trade back to take him. So I look at that too, and they didn't do that.
Very interesting.
I do understand the concern. I do understand the concern about the whole agent and the Bulls being related to them, you know, having that close-knit relationship.
like, okay, I think it's Bulls fans looking at this and saying just like, how lazy is the front office, right? I think Bulls fans that are skeptics and pessimists when it comes to the front office doing due diligence across the board for everything that their jobs entail, they look at this relationship with in Chicago agency with all these various athletes that they've represented over the years and say, oh, we need a random bench stash player. All right, let's call up Mark and see who he's got. Like, who needs a job on the NBA market right now? And it comes across to the average fan paying attention as lazy. And it's not just that. It harkens back to and ties in with the theory that they were lazy in their job search of Fred Hoiberg. Because of the Ames, Iowa connection. So I get that that's probably the perception from the fan base. But your point about the Bulls staying away from Michael Porter Jr., and that was the Bartlestein aspect was definitely one of the reasons I was terrified that they were going to draft MPJ. Because you and I both know I wanted them to stay as far away from him as they could. Clearly, those most up-to-date medical reports they got the week of the draft had bad signs all over them. And that is why not only did the Bulls pass on Michael Porter Jr. at 7, but the former number one projected overall pick fell all the way down to, what was it, 14, where Denver took him? Yep. So six teams after the Bulls passed on him. So to me, that is at least one example of saying, okay, this might strike the average fan as, really, like, dude, how lazy are you? You only work with this one agency in Chicago when you're trying to find talent for your basketball team? It's not like it was a guarantee that Bartlestein was repping Michael Porter Jr., thus the Bulls would draft Michael Porter Jr. They clearly did their homework there, saw that there was at least some substantial level of concern with his health and his medicals, and steered clear.
So I don't think I take this for anything, and I want fans out there not to hold it against the player either. You know what I'm saying? Like what we were saying at the draft time, like don't hold it against Chandler Hutchison and actually evaluate his game. Same thing with Parker, and there's mixed reviews on Parker. I get that. But don't hold it against the player. And maybe this is just a part of the relationship that is held. If you're wondering, okay, what are the other teams that have players on his client list that are represented? Are the Bulls, do the Bulls have the most players of among one NBA team? And actually the Portland Trailblazers have four players as the same as the Bulls. The Portland Trailblazers have Zach Collins, Jake Layman, Nick Stauskas, and Wade Baldwin all on Portland, all represented by Mark Bartlestein. Like the overall conversation about this is I just think, you know, it's the way the Bulls operate, man. Like you can look at it across the board, family, like very tight knit, very family business oriented. Like it makes sense. Like you think about the way the Bulls have been run, it makes a lot of sense. And so it just goes along with the fact that this is part of what we have to deal with as fans, you know, whether or not the player actually turns out to be good or not, just kind of the way this Bulls team and this Bulls organization operates. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it might not necessarily be a good thing either. And this could help. Like if star player does change agencies, he does go to Priority Sports, that could help the Bulls. You know what I'm saying? So I wouldn't say it's necessarily an automatic negative, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's an automatic positive either.
Yeah, so Tiago's question of like, what do the Bulls get out of this with, you know, making Mark Bartlestein happy because they sign a bunch of his clients? It's just a positive working relationship. And there are people in your circles as a group of people running an NBA organization. There are people in your circles that you trust and you work with regularly, and there are people that you trust less and work with less frequency. So I think just, you know, Priority Sports is big in Chicago. They clearly have a very, not only professional, but friendly relationship with that agency, and thus do a lot of work with each other. It's not like they're getting anything great out of it. It's right. Just that, like, maybe when it comes to talent that is represented by Mark Bartlestein, the Bulls, when they are doing their scouting and their access and their interviews, whether this is a player coming into the draft or a player on the free agent market, they have some extra access to those players and some extra inside information about those players because of their strong relationship with Mark and Priority Sports that they might not get elsewhere across the league.
And look, I think this happens all around the league, like not just in basketball, but in all professional sports, there's other teams out there that have connections to agencies that they've had working relationships, like you've said, for the past 20 years, 25 years, whatever it is. It happens everywhere. It's just more specified here in Chicago and more narrowed focused from Bulls fans because they see the other things that go around the organization that speak to like business relationships, using past friendships, those types of things.
Yeah. And what, like, that's what I was saying with like, it just goes in line with the theory and the narrative that this front office is lazy. They were lazy in their coaching search because they're obsessed with people that come out of Iowa State and Ames, Iowa, and they are lazy in their, you know, their lack of doing business with anyone other than this one agency here in Chicago, and the half of their players that they've come through this organization under the helm of, you know, Paxton and Foreman have been Mark Bartlestein clients. It plays into that narrative. Now, whether or not you want to believe that narrative is up to you, but the pieces fit together, and it's not just about Priority Sports, the agency. It's about the front office and the way they do things.
Yeah, and it goes all the way up to ownership, too. The relationship is there with the Reinsdorfs, more so than it is with Paxton and Gar Foreman. So it's just kind of the way the Bulls are run, like whether you like that or not. But it can play into a positive role for the Bulls down in the future, too. So it's good to have that sort of working relationship. It can work both ways. So
yeah, who does Anthony Davis get represented by right now? Because let's get him in Bartlestein's office.
Let's take a short break again. When we come back, we're taking a couple more voicemails before we get out of here. Once again, 331-979-1369 is the place to hit us up. Text messages and voicemails there. We want to hear from you, so make sure you drop us a call. Don't be shy about it. Call that number, drop us a voicemail, let us know what you're thinking. 331-979-1369. Be back here on Locked On Bulls in 60 seconds. Stay right with us. Back here on Locked On Bulls, we've got another voicemail to get to. This one is from Cole in Illinois.
Hey, guys. It's Cole from Illinois. I was just thinking, what do you think, why would the Bulls need to make the playoffs next year? I mean, I know it's the Eastern Conference, and I know it could be real easy and everything, but with the pieces that the Bulls have, you and I both know that the Bulls are not playoff contenders, even in the weak Eastern Conference. Lauri Markkanen is probably our only good player right now. Zach LaVine is not an all-star. Jabari Parker is probably not going to be that special next year. And we probably are going to have to restart. I hope not, but this time, it's not looking the greatest right now with Chris Dunn and all these weak pieces that we have right now, like Cameron Payne.
All right, Matt, we've kind of gone over this, and it brought up a pretty interesting theory that I have, but I want to hear you first. As far as playoffs go, I think you and I are pretty much in the same boat. Like, this, the playoff is a dream shot. Everything would have to go right for them to be in the playoffs next year. But I want you to more specifically touch on this.
Yeah, so thanks for the call, Cole. I think Cole is in line with my line of thought, which is that, look, all this talk about how the East is weak and the Cavs lost LeBron, and the East is up for grabs, and you know, even if the Bulls aren't going to be rivaling with Boston and Philly and their young cores all of a sudden, that they're still good enough with this young core in year two, and then now with Jabari being added in, that they're going to be better than some of the other bad, really bad, bad teams in the East. I think they're going to be somewhere in the middle of the bad teams, which is why I was saying as part of our conversation on Monday, before we went insane with the Jabari Lowry rotation stuff, that if this Bulls team hypothetically comes into their March 1st part of the schedule and they got a month and change left and they are 4 or 5 games out of the 8th seed, I would much rather see them lose most of those games down the stretch to go back into the high end of the lottery for the 2019 draft. As you said, it is a thinner draft class. It drops off earlier than the 2018 draft class. This is why I would like to see the Bulls back in that lottery, preferably with the most ping pong balls possible. As far as what I think is going to happen, I think something along those lines is going to happen. I think that they're going to be a bubble borderline playoff team that's not quite good enough to be the 8th seed. And I would much rather see them just, you know, start over and try again in 1920 and as opposed to like, oh, we made it as an 8 seed. Cool. All right. Well, we played 4 playoff games and now the season's over. But I don't buy into this theory that some insanely optimistic Bulls fans are spouting. They're like, dude, look how weak the East is. This Bulls roster, this core, this young core, if they play well together, they can easily be like the 4th or 5th seed. I'm saying like, what? What are you talking about?
A lot of things need to go right in order for them to make the playoffs.
Yeah. For them to be better than any combination of Boston, Philly, Toronto, Milwaukee, Indiana, I'm sorry. The Bulls are not better than any of those 5 teams. If they wildly overperform, they could maybe be the 6th seed. Washington's still there. I mean, like, I don't know what those people.
Yeah, and you even brought it up on Monday's episode too, is that Cleveland could be better than we're actually expecting them to be. You know, just because LeBron left doesn't mean that team is totally trash now. So that might be another team that might be at the back end of the playoffs too in the Eastern Conference. And look, this is what I'll tell you, Cole, real quick, is the Bulls don't have to restart if they don't make the playoffs here. And, you know, regardless of what you feel like, and every fan has a different opinion about how they feel about every single one of these players on this roster, the one thing we do agree on is that Lauri Markkanen is going to be the cornerstone of this team when it's all said and done. That's great, but I don't think you have to necessarily hit the reset button, and that's not what's going to happen with this team. Zach LaVine is here for 4 years. Unless they trade him, he's a part of this core going forward. Lauri Markkanen, part of this core going forward as well. So I think those two guys, on top of whatever happens here this season, is just going to be gravy. Like, if they go to one extreme and they make the playoffs, that's great, because that means multiple things went right for the Bulls this year. We're seeing multiple developments in these players. So that's a good thing if they do make the playoffs. Even if they get knocked out in the first round, that's okay, because you can spin it a bunch of different ways. Oh, it's a good way to pitch to free agencies, et cetera, to top free agents, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
If they go all the way to the bottom, Matt, and they get into the top 5 of the lottery, that's also good too. Maybe it's not necessarily great that the player development wasn't there, or maybe there is a major injury on this Bulls team this year that we don't foresee coming. That's not necessarily a bad thing either, but I think if they're stuck in the middle somewhere, I don't think that's necessarily bad either. The rebuilds take more than 2 years, and that's what we have to keep preaching to them, is that like rebuilds aren't going to happen that quickly. No. And they take multiple years. And I think you and I can agree on this, that the Bulls are set up better than some of the other rebuilding teams right now. Don't you agree, as far as the talent that they can evaluate this season? Like, go look at Orlando. They're trash. Go look at the Hornets. They're trash.
Sacramento.
Go look. Yeah, some of these other teams that don't have anybody that they can be hopeful about.
If Trae Young doesn't pan out, Atlanta's just going nowhere fast. You're not wrong there. And If the Bulls randomly like overachieve and make a playoff spot as 6, 7, or 8, okay, fine, cool. I don't think it's going to happen. But yeah, to your point and to Cole's question, no, it's not like if this Bulls team in year 2 of the rebuild fails to make the playoffs with this young core that they're going to blow it up again and like start over. The only way that you might see an element of that with quote-unquote starting over again is, okay, the Jabari experiment didn't work out. We have the option to let him walk. We will let him walk. And we're going to refocus on Markkanen, hopefully on Dunn and LaVine as well, and on Wendell Carter Jr. and a lottery pick in 2019. That, in a sense, would be not really starting over. You're just like, okay, we took an unexpected left turn here because we were really curious to see where this road went. And we went down that road for a season, and we decided, this detour doesn't look like it's going anywhere pleasant or promising. So we're going to get back on the main highway. And we're going to get back on the main highway without Jabari. But it's not like you have to blow up everything. If and certainly you don't have to blow up everything if they don't make the playoffs. I don't think that has anything to do with
it. The best part is if this does turn into a dumpster fire and they end up in the top 5 of the lottery, that means a possibility of getting RJ Barrett or Zion Williamson. Real quick, did you see Zion Williamson dunk from literally the free throw line?
From the free throw line? How did he get all of that poundage to fly through the air, man, that far? I thought that was a doctored video. I really, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, there's no way that gigantic man actually just flew from the free throw line and dunked it. And it's not like he barely made it. Like, he flew from the free throw line and dunked it with authority. That dude, whew, excited to watch him.
All right, final text message before we get out of here. This comes from the 808. We touched on a little bit of his question before. It was talking about Portis and a trade chip. So yes, we definitely answered that before. But he brings up also an interesting point. It says, another team is still interested in picking up Rodney Hood. To have a possible starting five of Dunn, Levine, Hood, Parker, and Markkanen with a bench of Payne, Valentine, Hutchison, and Carter. How do you guys feel about this possibility of a move, since it might be a distinct possibility? What do you think about Rodney Hood now?
I mean, it's crazy that Rodney Hood is still unsigned. We kind of forget about that just because free agency is in everybody's rearview mirror. The LeBron decision happened quickly. All of the other dominoes fell behind it. The Rockets just finally got Carmelo signed the other day. And you're just like, wait, where did Rodney Hood end up? Oh, wait, Rodney Hood is still on the market? So it's crazy that he's still unsigned here as we hit the middle of August. I don't care. I mean, I'm sorry. I can't even pretend to be interested in this. I'm rooting for Rodney Hood to have a successful career. I don't have anything against Rodney Hood. After the tough time he had in Cleveland and being bounced around this year, maybe he just needs the right environment, but nothing that I've seen from Rodney Hood in his game says that we need to go out and get.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you too. And maybe Rodney Hood can turn into being something good, but I don't think he helped himself out at all when he went to the Cavs and then things got weird in the playoffs and he didn't even play and didn't want to play. Like, when Ty Lue was going to sub him in and he's like, no, I'm not going in.
He pulled a Scotty, man.
That was a weird look for Rodney
Hood.
He
pulled a Scotty from the 94 playoffs.
I think when it's all said and done, he's probably going to go back to Cleveland. Like, even if it's on a small one-year deal, he needs a place where he can play a lot of minutes and prove to himself maybe next year in 2019 as a player that can come out and actually be a part of a rotation and be the player that he was in Utah. Everybody thought he was coming out of Duke. So I think he's going to go back to Cleveland or one of these other teams that he's going to play a whole hell of a lot of minutes at. So I know the Bulls still got a roster space open, but I think they're looking at the other options towards the end of the bench, the cheaper options, talking about Archie Diacono or Antonius Cleveland or somebody like Derek Walton Jr., who they just brought in as well. So, and then you've got Raleigh Atkins too on the two-way deal. So I think they're going to look at those guys more so than maybe thinking about spending on Rodney Hood. And plus, if they brought Rodney Hood in too, I don't think he qualifies for the mid-level exception. So I think Rodney Hood would put them over the cap limit, and there's no way the Bulls are going over the cap.
Jordan, before we get out of here, let's bookend the episode with learning and educating one another about certain phraseology. So I talked to you about the whole when you assume you make an ass out of you and me phrase. You said this phrase a couple of times on our show today, and I feel like I'm either hearing you wrong or you're saying a phrase that is common in a very strange way. When you say when it's all said and done, are you saying set and done with it, like S-E-T, set and done?
Yes, and I tend to say things wrong all the time, so you know that about me. It's said and done, right?
When it's all said and done. And really, I mean, the original is when all is said and done, and then people kind of morphed it into when it's all said and done. And that is like a phrase that people who talk about sports on TV and on podcasts, whatever, say, here's my way of saying, long story short, what I'm about to say is the crux of my opinion or the crux of my argument. But I kept hearing a T. And I was like, what? Are you saying set and done?
I hear it multiple ways, man. Like, I hear it set and done and said and done, too.
Do you hear set and done from anyone other than your own mouth?
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's other people
That's what I thought. You are. I mean, I was like, I've never heard anyone say it that way before.
Yep. So, all right. If Bulls fans out there, if you say set and done, text it in. Hit us up on social media as well, because
devil's in the details, man.
It really is.
Just like Jeremy from Idaho and his insistence that it is not Boise, it's Boise. And also, DVS, always love to hear from you, buddy, but it's not Chandler Hutchinson, which certainly seems like just a normal last name, but there's no N. It's Hutchison. Let's all be accurate as we can on this show.
If we're doing corrections, it's Derek Walton Jr., not Derek Walter.
Oh, did I say Derek Walter?
Yes, sir.
Oh, all right. I was thinking about Breaking Bad earlier today. I don't know why, but for some reason Walter White has just been like a name that's been in my head.
One of the greatest shows of all time, and Better Call Saul is just as good.
Oh, that's why I was thinking about it. Thank you for reminding me.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, you can hit us up 331-979-1369. We want to hear from you. Drop us a voicemail, don't be shy. Or text message if you feel more comfortable that way. 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We have more information about our Bobby Portis event coming up again, but just to remind everybody, if you didn't hear our show on Friday, we are doing a bowling event with Bobby Portis September 8th, Saturday, September 8th at Kings in Lincoln Park. So we'll have more information as we get it for you guys. So hopefully we'll have a ton of information for you guys next week. Hoping tickets will be out sometime next week as well. Keep you all updated for that, but get excited. September 8th, Kings in Lincoln Park, Bobby Portis, Locked On Bulls. Going to be a lot of fun. We'd like to see a lot of you out there as well. For Matt Peck, for Jordan Malley, that's going to about do it. Locked On Bulls fans, thank you so much for listening. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com